As missiles fell on Ukrainian cities, so international condemnation rained down on Vladimir Putin and the Russian attack.
Early this morning, Russian troops invaded Ukraine, a free and sovereign country. And once again, in the center of Europe, innocent women, men and children are dying of fear for their lives. We condemn this barbaric attack.
Later on Thursday, EU leaders will meet to discuss developments that they'd hoped against hope wouldn't happen, and the scale of which now none could entirely have foreseen. From national capitals, leader after leader promised a coordinated and unprecedented sanctions response aimed at President Putin, the Russian elite, and the sources and havens of Russian wealth, hoping against hope again that they will make a difference. US President Joe Biden joined a Zoom meeting of G7 leaders. In a statement earlier, the US president said Russia alone is responsible for the death and destruction this attack will bring. And British Prime Minister Boris Johnson set diplomatic niceties aside, describing Vladimir Putin as a dictator.
For all his bombs and tanks and missiles, I don't believe that the Russian dictator will ever subdue the national feeling of the Ukrainians and their passionate belief that their country should be free.
But while determined efforts continue by a number of countries to supply Ukraine with lethal and defensive weapons, no one is offering to stand shoulder to shoulder with Kiev and fight.
We have made it clear that we don't have any plans and intention of deploying NATO troops to Ukraine. What we have made clear is that we have already increased and we are increasing the presence of NATO troops in the eastern part of the alliance on NATO territory.
That will not be a factor in Putin's plans for now. And neighbouring countries have other problems to consider. The Polish government says 9 reception points will be opened along Ukraine's border to receive an expected wave of refugees. A country that in recent months has used force to repel refugees from the Middle East must now brace for Ukrainians fleeing war in their thousands. Jonah Hull, Al Jazeera.
OK, let's gauge the European reaction. Dominic Cain's in Berlin. The German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, was speaking a little earlier today. Dom, so what options does the EU have now, do we think, moving forward?
Well, the funny thing about this is that the EU leaders who, in one sense, are decisive are the French president, the German chancellor, and they've been taking part in a virtual summit of the G7 leaders, which has broken up in the course of the last 45 minutes, 50 minutes, Peter. And if you'll allow me to read the statement that they've come up with, it is pretty strong, in fairness. It goes to what Jonah was just telling us in his report there about sanctions, the options that are available. And you won't be surprised to hear that they condemn the actions of Russia, the invasion of Ukraine. They express their unshakable solidarity with Ukraine. And then they go into detail about the sorts of things that they consider to be important going forward about energy stability in the world and the availability of energy supplies being guaranteed. Well, that clearly is a reference to the gas markets and the oil markets. Remember that gas and oil, natural gas and oil, are major cash crops, as it were, revenue generators for Russia and could conceivably be targeted in sanctions. And so there is reference to that in the statement that's coming from the G7 leaders. Remember, that takes in, the group of seven takes in the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Canada, all of them expressing solidarity. And, of course, it includes the EU institutions, Ursula von der Leyen and President Charles Michel as well. Interestingly, the G7 leaders are also effectively expressing their very serious condemnation of the role of Belarus in this situation. Remember, we've seen the pictures of Russian armor, tanks and armored personnel carriers apparently crossing the Belarusian border into Ukraine on their way to Kiev, was the suggestion. Well, the G7 leaders talking about the situation in Ukraine and Belarus and condemning the role of Ukraine. Now, this has been dropping in the course of the last few minutes, but it's clear the G7 leaders are trying to make very abundantly clear their position here. The Japanese Prime Minister is saying that he is looking at targeted economic sanctions against Russia that would be painful and would make the Russian government realise what he considers to be the error of their actions. This doesn't necessarily mean that this exactly what's being put out here is what the EU leaders will agree, but it is suggestive, strongly suggestive, that what we'll hear from Brussels in the hours to come is a variation on the theme that this statement is putting out there. And remember, it's not the only meeting that's taking place in the course of the next 24 hours. We know that NATO is going to have a virtual summit in Brussels again tomorrow, where further action may be being discussed. But pretty clear coming from the G7 leaders there, their real condemnation of what President Putin's troops are doing in Ukraine and what they believe the way forward should be.
Dom, thank you very much. Dominic Keane there joining us live here on the programme as part of our continuing coverage out of Berlin. Now, the UK is expected to announce more sanctions against Russia. Niamh Barker joins us from London. So, as we were discussing a little earlier, Niamh, strong words from Boris Johnson talking about Vladimir Putin having unleashed a wave of violence in eastern Ukraine. But the reality is the posture of NATO hasn't change. Their people are, quote, ready, but it's a backup support function at most. So beyond sanctions, where next?
Yeah, that's a big question, isn't it? Yeah, it is. When I was at NATO headquarters last week, ahead of course, this invasion, it was NATO's central identity, I suppose, to reiterate time and time again that it is a defensive organisation, that it poses no threat to Russia, and as such, Russia should freely come to the negotiating table with the NATO alliance and sit down and hopefully come to a nice solution to all of that. That clearly has not happened, but in many ways, the UK as a NATO member, its hands are tied when it comes to providing any more military support to Ukraine. It's a very, very difficult tightrope to walk, because if the UK and other NATO alliance countries do too much, it could be drawn into a protracted conflict in a country that it has no existing treaty to defend. But if it does too little, then it could be a gift horse, I suppose, to Vladimir Putin. And clearly, he sees the opportunity now to launch this invasion. You know, just building on what we heard there from Dominic in Berlin, I think the question now is, OK, NATO members are all singing from the same hymn sheet. EU members are all singing from the same hymn sheet. So is the UK as well. What about the speed in this, though? Because it can be very, very, a very, very slow process getting all EU 27 member states to agree to anything. We know that sanctions are on the way in many different shapes and forms. But the speed of this is going to be absolutely crucial in sending the right signal to the Russians as quickly as possible. Moscow can achieve an awful lot within 48 hours. We've seen over the course of the day already a tremendous amount has happened. If the UK and EU and NATO alliance don't act quickly, the situation will be incredibly complicated and sanctions will be less effective than they hope they will be if they don't act immediately.
Niamh, thank you very much. Niamh Barker there with breaking down for us what's going on in London amongst the political leaders there in the UK capital. Let's bring in Alexander Bratetsky. He's a senior political analyst for Finam News website. He's also a political scholar at Memo. That's an international think tank. He joins us from Moscow. Alexander Bratetsky, you've been waiting there a long time, sir. We do appreciate you standing by to talk to us here continuing coverage of what's going on in eastern Ukraine. Question one. Is stage one for Vladimir Putin creating some sort of rump Ukraine light buffer zone slash protectorate going from Crimea across to Luhansk, up to Donetsk and encompassing the Donbass region there, where all the fighting is going on in eastern Ukraine at the moment?
That's definitely maybe his goal, historical and maybe political, as he, in his address to the nation, has dismantled the Ukrainian Soviet Republic, which was created by the Bolsheviks and Vladimir Lenin. But actually, I don't think so he is politically acting for this, because this will be the end of his political regime. And he is now seen as sort of like a dictator of sorts, like Saddam Hussein in And even the attack on Ukraine can be seen as attack of the United States on Yugoslavia in 1991, regardless of Mr. Milosevic's action, that was an interference into an independent country. And Putin, who mentioned the Yugoslavia, was actually doing almost the same. So it looks like he is trying to use this kind of a scenario where he would pressure the Ukrainian authorities for peace, maybe in a two days or 3 days, because to have that long-standing war with Ukraine would be actually very expensive, even for the Russian budget. The Russian economy is not in good shape. Ukrainian army was going to be fighting back, and also the partisan movement. We should take this into account. So the things are very serious for Vladimir Putin right now. So, and it's very important where he would stop, to pressure Ukraine to negotiate or to go further, which I don't think so would be.
Why do you say he's perceived as being a dictator in Russia? I mean, I get it that he's perceived as being a Russian dictator in Ukraine, but his popularity figures are always very healthy in Russia.
That's true. But for every leader, you, for example, we sometimes compare the situation to the Caribbean crisis. And while the U.S. was also guilty for taking part in this crisis, Nikita Khrushchev, who acted very bizarrely, was actually almost 2 years in power later on, and then he was actually taken away by the Politburo, who actually accused him of radical actions, and he was replaced by a much more conservative and much more sober figure like Leonid Brezhnev. So it's very difficult. I don't think some people within the Putin's inner circle agree with all his actions. Yes, we see people nodding in advance. We see people, yes, Mr. President, but it's a very difficult and very complicated situation because, let's say, in Georgia in 2008, we had a different picture. Georgia did a preemptive attack on Abkhazia. Yeah, it's breakaway republic. And Mr. Medvedev, who actually acted on his will, also, but he did not take Tbilisi. He did not, hijack Mr. Saakashvili, put him in jail. That was a different time. So that happened in 3 days. Mr. Putin, of course, is a different figure, but the burden is very heavy. So even people within my circle who supported the independence of the republics, because, yes, the republics were also bombed by the Ukrainian side, are not supporting the war. They say it should be done diplomatically, and they also blame Putin. So they are hardline Putinist, and there are people who are within the Putin circle, but also kind of like they have a different opinion. So things are very complicated in the Russian society. It's not black and white. It's not the full support of the president.
Alexander Brzezinski, we've heard from Volodymyr Zelensky in the last hour or so. He was as live, as we call it in international television newsrooms. We went to a tape feed of him talking to the people of Ukraine about, what, 45 minutes ago now. He was saying, we have got Russian POWs, we have downed some of their aircraft, we will fight back. So he's clearly solid and sound in his belief in his own abilities. But when the Russian army is firing, you know, we had at breakfast time this morning, your time, those reports of Russian cruise missiles, and that made me sit up and listen. The idea of Russia using cruise missiles, we've heard nothing else about that in the intervening 12 hours or so. But when Mr. Putin is firing his bullets, or his soldiers are firing their bullets at Ukrainians, is Russia also, however, firing bullets at the West, at the outside world, firing bullets at NATO, firing bullets at all those European presidents and prime ministers who are deciding, what do we do after sanctions?
Well, of course, he's firing bullets on the West. He hated NATO for giving this expansion. And I don't want to be a devil advocate because I don't want to justify the actions of my president. But he did have legitimate concerns. Of all our presidents, Mikhail Gorbachev, Boris Nikolaevich Yeltsin, they all had legitimate concerns over NATO moving to Russian borders. And we said, no, sorry, we need to negotiate. And they never took us seriously. That was also a voice within the Russian community. But Mr. Putin has crossed certain lines. He crossed the line. So he crossed the line and becoming, this is a sort of a figure like Saddam Hussein was for the Americans, right? So it looks like he is firing bullets to the United States. And of course, the sanctions would be very heavy. And I don't think so the Russians want to say, oh, thank you very much, Mr. President, for the milk goes, you know, up, or I couldn't pay my salary. Some of my friends are even thinking about emigration right now, and they love Russia. They're not somebody who would say they would like to live in the West because for the sake of it. No, they want to leave because they do not agree with the policy of the current leadership and the young people. I'm an old man, so I'm staying. But younger people have different views. And they feel like, for them, this is a war in the middle of Europe, right? Which is, we all love Russian army. It's been, we just celebrated the Red Army anniversary. And everybody are proud of the army actions, but not in this way. Because, yes, our army is fighting against another Slavic nation. So that's a big reason. That's
Alexander Brodetsky, thank you so much for talking to us there. I suspect from what looks like a very nice and sounds like a very nice piano bar there in Moscow, a slightly unreal moment, he's gone on a slightly unreal day, of course. Let's just play you some pictures we're just receiving now coming to us from Moscow. That rather nondescript gentleman you're looking at is one of the key players in the room. I don't know who he is, but he is a key player because he's a very wealthy guy, because he is one of Russia's many oligarchs. Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, is in that chamber as well. There we are. Of course, since 2018, the reason he's talking to them, I guess, is that since 2018, several Russian oligarchs, and these people are not just wealthy, they are eye-wateringly wealthy. They would make King Solomon's miners blush. They are so wealthy, but their companies have been hit by US sanctions. It was under a thing, an umbrella piece of legislation, international legislation. It was called the Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act, because they support directly, financially, politically as well, the Russian government's, and I quote from the act, the Russian government's malign activities around the globe. All the men in that chamber that Mr. Putin is addressing and talking to, and I guess bolstering and saying to them, look, it's going to be OK, look, the economy is going to be OK. This talk of chucking us out of the SWIFT interbanking system around the world is not going to happen because we are insulated. We have ridden the wave of sanctions now for 4 years, and look, the economy is basically sound because all those guys, they started making big amounts of money when the Soviet Union fell to bits, 1989, 1990, when the Berlin Wall came down as well, when, you'll remember, Mr. Gorbachev famously at the time said to Erich Honecker, the East German premier, leave the wall open. And that was the beginning of the end of the USSR. So those are the latest pictures coming to us from Moscow. Our White House correspondent Kimberly Halkett tracking events for us up and down the political halls of power there at the White House. So, Kimberly, we've got an hour and a half to go until we hear from Mr. Biden, and I guess he's going to come out fighting with that second, more impactful lily pad of sanctions.
Yeah, we expect that the U.S. president, when he addresses the American public, will make good on that promise that if Russia invades, ignores the first rounds of sanctions that were put in place by the U.S. and European leaders to try and deter an invasion, that the result or consequences would be even more punishing. So we expect the U.S. president to outline what that will look like. We believe it will be some sort of a series of sanctions designed to cut Russia off completely from the global financial system and also end Europe's dependence permanently on Russian oil. So that is what we're watching for very carefully. But also what we're watching for carefully is what he's going to say to the American people, because already this is an administration that has been intimating there will be a cost to the American public, whether it is in the form of potential cyber attacks to American businesses or even the rise in the price of gasoline for their automobiles to get to and from work. So the U.S. president expects to talk about some of those costs, but why he feels it's important. He believes that this is about not just standing up for what is right. In fact, the G7 leaders, as they broke up from that meeting, that virtual meeting he participated in earlier, said that what they're doing is not only condemning Russia's actions, but also expressing solidarity for Ukraine. But the U.S. president is going to make the case that this is about defending democracy and American values.
Do you get the feeling, Kimberly, because you and I a year ago had lots and lots of conversations on this program when it was candidate Biden. And it was interesting because as a Democratic presidential candidate, he was kind of on the same page as Donald Trump in one regard. And it was this. It was, I'm not going to get sucked into big foreign crises thousands of miles away for no good reason. And here we are. He's getting sucked into it. Whether he likes it or not, he's the guy that people go to because they need to know what he's thinking, what he's planning.
This is a problem for a president that is already struggling in the polls. He was largely elected for reasons that are domestic, to get control of the COVID pandemic that has left the American economy sputtering, and still millions of Americans struggling to find the kind of work that they would like. And we've also seen, as a result of that, the rise in inflation as Americans try to get their economy going again. So his poll numbers are already struggling. And this is not going to help them much. In fact, the latest poll shows that, in fact, only 26% of Americans believe that the United States should be involved in any way in defending Ukraine from a Russian invasion. And so the U.S. president has a tough case to make, that not only is there the obligation, but he may also have to explain something that's going to get a lot more uncomfortable. He has promised a war-weary American public that it has seen a generation of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, that there will be no American boots on the ground in Ukraine. Here's the problem for Mr. Biden, though. If that conflict spills over into Latvia or any other neighboring NATO country, there's going to be an obligation of the United States to get involved, because that would invoke Article 5, that an attack on one is an attack on all when it comes to the NATO alliance. And so while the U.S. president has made this promise to the American public, he may now have to explain that if this goes further than Ukraine, Americans will be seeing conflict again, one that many people don't want, and you're right, the U.S. president really shied away from on the campaign trail.
Kimberly, thank you so much. We'll talk to you a little later. Mr. Biden, due to talk to the world, talk to the nation in, what, 55 minutes? You'll bring it to us live, I'm sure. Thank you very much, Kimberly Halkett there. OK, it is...